Pocket. 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 We deserve this win, man.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your harmonium for trade deadline pandemonium. It's the Purple and Black Pill. Hello, friends. My name's Ty Foster. I have been watching the Kings not do all that much at the trade deadline since the early 1990s. Joining me, my best friend, a man who can claim the same. It's Duncan Smith. Hello, Duncan.
What is a harmonium, like a small piano or something? It's like what you would play if you had petticoats on?
It is a reed instrument. I think it's probably something that you like play like a melodica, but who could say for sure? Rhymezone.com is the one that gave me that one, which is how I do all of my songwriting too. So, you know, just a little bit of shop talk there.
Oh, I was thinking of harpsichord. You should try writing a song on harpsichord.
Well, yeah, I'm not talented enough to do that. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart was a guy that loved to do that. And, you know, maybe I'm that good, but I don't think so.
Yeah, we won't know for another 500 years.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyway, enough about my artistic pursuits. We missed last week, I'm sorry to say, because your boy, Ty Foster, had the novel coronavirus, COVID-19. That sucked a lot. Just a good old week of being super sick. So sorry we missed you last week. Sorry we're also back with no cool guests this time. No Deuce and Moe, no Will Griffith, just your old standard Purple and Black Pill Duncan and Ty slop. Oops.
Yeah, but we are going to make it interesting somehow.
Yeah, come hell or high water. Going to run down the games that the Kings played in this stretch. They had most of their 7-game road trip during this period. Kings went 4-4 in the last 2 weeks. They are sitting at 32-25, good for third in the West, still holding strong. They are now 7.5 games behind first place Denver, who has definitely opened things up. And they are only 4 ahead of 11th place Portland to stay in the play-in bracket. Things, as always this season, remain extremely bunched up. But boy, have things changed in terms of personnel in the Western Conference. We will get to that absolute whirlwind of a trade deadline. But first, let's run down the games real quick. February 1st at San Antonio, won that one 119-109. On the 3rd at Indy, heartbreaker, lost to Tyrese Halliburton, all-star Tyrese Halliburton's Indiana Pacers, 104-107. The 5th at New Orleans got absolutely blitzed, 104-136. The 6th at Houston, 140-120, Kings destroyed. The 8th at Houston, 130-128, barely snuck away with that one. And man, I just want to add a little side note here. Houston is ass in a way that I have not seen a team be in a long time. That team looks miserable. They don't appear to be developing their young players at all. I feel for that fan base right now because boy, have we been there.
Yeah, that's definitely an alternative timeline for us. I was one of the people that thought, like, if you're going to make a trade as big as the Halliburton trade, then you might as well just like stick with the youngest guys on the roster, blow it up and start from square one. And it's ugly, you know, just because you are theoretically developing players doesn't mean that you're actually going to win with them in the future, because maybe those guys suck. Maybe they really just don't like being there and they're considering it like the job to get their next job. You know, like it's not pretty.
Steven Silas just looks out of his depth. I saw this clip of him post-game. It wasn't after a Kings game. I forget when it was, but he was just giving such strong substitute teacher energy. He was like trying to do like the motivational, like slap the dais and, you know, get a little emotion going. And he's like, this is not how we're supposed to play. And it just fell so flat. Like you could feel it. It was like a bad stand-up act or something. Really, really brutal.
They're not giving the effort on the defensive end. They're not getting after it like they're supposed to. They're not getting into their man and fighting over and helping each other. They're not doing what they're supposed to do.
Got to figure he won't be around anymore.
Yeah, a lot like Luke Walton when you watch Steven Silas coach.
Yep. Anyway, enough about that stupid team. The 10th at home against Dallas, lost that one 114-122 with no Luka. Kyrie's first game with Dallas. Again, we'll get to that. Next night against Dallas, 133-128 OT win. Something of a signature win, I think, for this season. Luka was back. That was the first game Luka and Kyrie played together. De'Aaron Fox went into the second half of the fourth quarter, I think, with 12 points and finished with 36 after OT was finished. Absolute crunch time murderer. This man has fully taken a second leap. Again, we'll get into that more later in the episode. And then finally, tonight, Tuesday night, February 14th, Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's to those who celebrate. At Phoenix, 109-120 loss. Pretty frustrating, but also kind of felt like we maybe just sort of lost to a better team. I know that feels weird to say because Kevin Durant was not playing yet. And there was obviously no Mikal Bridges, no Cam Johnson, but we got Chris Paul to death. He had like 19 assists. He was hitting every single mid-range. You know, Devin Booker is still on a little bit of a minutes restriction, but he looked really good. Did you have any thoughts about this one tonight?
Yeah, I agree. We did lose to a better team there, I think. And I think they're also just sort of a matchup nightmare for us. You know, like their third best player tonight, or maybe not tonight, but pre-Kevin Durant, their third best player was DeAndre Ayton. And Ayton is exactly the kind of big that Sabonis just can't handle physically. He's not big enough. And Ayton can do so much work, just like A, gobbling up rebounds and putbacks, and B, stretching the floor and making Sabonis even more out of his element as a defensive anchor in the paint. So it really is tough when Chris Paul is a Hall of Famer, Devin Booker is building a Hall of Fame resume, and the third guy behind those guys can still just absolutely rip your best player to shreds and make him sort of useless. He had good stats in this game, but it just, he was outplayed. And all of that obviously is prior to Kevin Durant arriving on the roster, which will only make it more impossible for us to defend them. So, boy, really, really, really hope that we don't draw them as our first round opponent.
Oh, man. Real quick, shout out to DeAndre Ayton. I've never seen a person since the 1980s look more like a 1980s NBA player. Even his socks look like they're from the 80s somehow. I don't know how he does it, but I love that about him. It's about the only thing I love about the situation that the Kings found themselves in tonight. Was Ayton's comical old-timiness.
Also, while we're talking about the way that players look, I want to give a shout out to Josh Okogie, who looks so funny. He's always has looked like a cartoon character, but he looks way more like a cartoon character with the mask on. It's just great. I mean, the league always needs somebody who's wearing a mask, but Okogie, like with his haircut, with, I don't know, it's like the shape of his body is like a jelly bean or something. I don't know. I just love him.
I was watching the game tonight with my wife. Shout out to my wife watching the game with me on Valentine's Day. And every single time that he came up on the camera, she would go, Hannibal Lecter, which I thought was pretty much summed it up.
Yeah, but it's like a Hannibal cartoon. It's like if Hannibal Lecter got his own Saturday morning cartoon where he's like eating people, but also teaching lessons.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter as Bluey. So, as you said, speaking of Kevin Durant, what an absolutely insane trade deadline. It's so funny. Everybody was anticipating kind of a dud because everybody was just scared that the Rudy Gobert trade from last year was going to continue to hamper everybody's ability to make trades. And it turns out we've just turned a corner in the NBA where if you're willing to trade 4 or 5 second round picks, you can now make a trade because that's like apparently what happened in every single one of these. But Western Conference powers really, really improved, or at least added a lot of star power. There was unfortunately a wealth transfer from the East to the West at this deadline. Let's start with the Kings, who did next to nothing. They made a marginal move for Kessler Edwards to take a look at a guy for, you know, basically just to take on a little bit of cash. And I think we sent out a conditional second round pick or something. A lot of people on Kings Twitter were losing their fucking minds over the fact that Monty didn't push all in or at least make some kind of marginal move. I've been agitating for like Mason Plumlee or, you know, Tybalt or whatever over, you know, the course of this season. But I definitely could not find it in myself to be upset that he felt the need to hold steady with this team that's in third place in the West and has no real movable assets. Like, who do you want more than who you've got on this roster that you could reasonably get? I don't understand what people were so butthurt about.
Yeah, even before this season started, I didn't feel like we had any trade assets. Obviously, Lyles has played well and theoretically picked up some value. Like, if we were a tanking team, we probably could move him for a second round pick or something. And Terrence Davis probably falls in that same basket of guys that have played well enough to maybe be useful on another team. But also, like, I think this gets lost a lot in conversations around trades, specifically with the Kings. All the guys that you would consider trading on this roster, aside from Rashawn Holmes, who I don't really think is tradable. I don't think anybody's looking to add a guy like that who's under contract for, what, how many figures is that?
Like 12 for two more years or something like that.
10, 11 figures. Anyway, yeah, he just is owed too much as a guy that's completely out of the rotation, basically, to be tradable, especially with positive value, you know, like unless we're including something as sweetener. Everybody else, like Lyles and Davis and stuff, who are kind of the people, the players that people talked about moving, they're free agents this offseason. So nobody is giving up value for somebody who they can just sign in the offseason. Those guys aren't max contract guys, so the Kings don't have any real leverage to keep them around, aside from if they want to play here. So if I'm a team that thinks they're pretty good and maybe Terrence Davis could help, like, I'm just waiting. Because he's not going to win you a championship.
Yeah, Kings, you know, made their moves at last trade deadline and over the offseason. People act like a super active offseason is, like, worthless or something like that. It's recency bias, I guess. There was this one guy, this Kings Twitter personality, I forget his name, who was saying after the Kessler-Edwards trade that, like, we're a poverty franchise because we just do stuff like this to get money. You know, to like get cash considerations or whatever. And he's like, I will bet you $1 billion that Kessler Edwards doesn't see the floor. And then Kessler Edwards like played the entire fourth quarter tonight. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I thought he moved out there pretty well. I don't know. I'm not like deep on what Kessler Edwards' skill set is, but it seems like he's a pretty good athlete and pretty long. So I don't mind it.
Yeah, he looked pretty good to me. He's moving his feet on defense, seems to know how to rotate. Kings rotations, actually, I thought looked really good tonight. The defense is not good, don't get me wrong, but there are aspects of the team defense that are coming around. I could see this team getting good at defense with one major personnel upgrade over the offseason. That is all to say, I think that the Mike Brown effect is having some sort of movement in a positive direction. I don't think that it's a hopeless situation. It's not going to be getting that much better, I think, over the course of this year. But I am not by any means like feeling that that Monty put us in a bad position by not upgrading.
Nah, I mean, this season has never been about this season. It's a setup for the development of Murray and continued improvement of De'Aaron Fox and everything else. But we are not winning the championship this year. So it's not something that a trade for somebody like Mason Plumlee can change.
Yeah, this team is playing like and kind of looks and feels like a sixth seed to me. I am anticipating that's around where they'll finish. I hope that it's not lower than that, but that feels about right to me. Their record would put them, I think, around sixth in the East. There's nothing at all wrong with that. No matter what, we're ahead of schedule this year. And the chemistry and the offensive firepower that we've put together this year, it's everybody just fucking relax. Like, it's gonna be fine. Things are good this year. We have four of our five starters are participating in All-Star Weekend. Like, take the good news, for God's sake, Kings fans. Just relax and enjoy it.
Yeah, and also, you know, 4-4 isn't, like, incredibly inspiring, but, like, we are a .500 team, aside from some winning streaks. But just generally speaking, we haven't seen, like, an eight-game skid if we were in the position that we're in right now and had lost a bunch of games in a row coming into this trade deadline and then done nothing. Yeah, I think there would be more reason to be bummed about that.
Totally. But speaking of those Western Conference contenders upgrading, obviously we mentioned the Suns pushed all in for Kevin Durant. They gave up two giant rotation pieces, wings that everybody in the NBA loves, Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges. I think they gave up four first round picks and a pick swap to Brooklyn. They got back Durant, and I forget who else, but who cares?
TJ Warren,
that's right. Oh, not who cares. He's pretty good. That makes them the easy favorite to win the title, in my opinion. We saw how they look tonight. Paul looks like he's pretty much back. Obviously, they're going to have to manage he and Durant and Booker's minutes. Injuries are a major concern for them. But I think that was a really good trade for both teams. Win-win. Brooklyn kind of got out of the disaster that they put themselves in or ended up in. You know, in the Kyrie, Kevin Durant, Harden adventure. And, you know, they're in a position to compete, and they've got every fucking wing in the NBA on one roster. So that'll be an interesting experiment for the rest of this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be an interesting experiment for the rest of the year and also the offseason. Like, what are they going to do with Ben Simmons? There's still a lot of intrigue there, in my opinion.
My God. Imagine if we had traded De'Aaron Fox for Ben Simmons. Holy shit. That is something that I was agitating for very mildly. Glad I'm not Monty McNair. Oh my God.
We'd be a better defensive team.
Yeah, well, he's gone from like three all-star teams, I think two first-team All-NBA, a bunch of first-team all-defense, to playing like 15 minutes a game for a Brooklyn team that's not all that good. It's sad, man. I would love it if he could bounce back. It's a bummer whenever a young player just sort of loses it like that. It's not that common in basketball for this to happen. This feels like more like a baseball situation where a guy just like gets the yips and never recovers, like Rick Ankiel's himself or something. Very bizarre to witness. And I mean, just cannot be helping him to be playing in the swamp of like media attention with Kyrie and Durant and all that. Speaking of Kyrie, we mentioned he got moved to the Dallas Mavericks. Mavericks got Kyrie and Markieff Morris. Brooklyn got Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, a 2029 first and 2 seconds. That is a pretty decent haul for a guy who's going to be a free agent in the offseason, is going to be looking for max money, is not somebody most teams in the NBA would be interested in making a long-term investment in. Obviously, Kyrie is a genius with the basketball. He's an incredible shot creator and shooter and finisher. He's going to do some really fun things for Dallas, most likely. But honestly, I would rather have our roster than theirs, like easy.
You'd rather have the Kings roster than the Mavericks roster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean, I think it's hard to discount the long-term value of Luka. But if we mean for one game in 2023, yeah, I might agree with that.
I just can't root for a guy who looks like such a fucking crumb bum. I'm sorry. Luka Doncic, no NBA superstar in the history of the sport has ever looked like shit to the extent that this guy does. I know that looks aren't everything, but, you know, you're a performer, man. You can't just drink 15 beers a day. This is getting out of hand.
You'd rather that he have a chin, is what you're saying.
That's right. And if not a chin, at least shave once in a while.
Yeah, he kind of looks like Barney Gumble from The Simpsons, doesn't he?
Ah! Remember about the last 2 months is giving a guest lecture at Villanova, or maybe it was a street corner.
Yeah, it's a really incredible moment in the NBA that Luka and Jokic are two of the, you know, three or four best players in the game at this point, and they both just like look like they like wandered into the league from like a rec gym or something like that.
Your eyes have no fear. The monster's gone, he's on the run, and your daddy's here. Beautiful, 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 beautiful boy. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Moving on down the list of contenders or supposed contenders who added to their rosters, the Lakers made a trade that made me so mad. There was a three-teamer with Minnesota and Utah. They sent out Russell Westbrook, who you may have heard of, Damian Jones, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and a top-four protected first-round pick. They brought in D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, and Malik Beasley. There was original reporting before this broke, I think from Woj, that they were going to be sending out Westbrook and bringing in D'Angelo Russell. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And then suddenly there was reporting that they were adding Vanderbilt and Malik Beasley to the deal. And there was nothing additional going out. And you look at this trade from Utah's perspective and you're like, oh my God, this is just shameful tank shit. Like, Danny Ainge must have been so furious when the Jazz started out decent this year. Of all teams to just give a gift to, why are you helping out the Lakers of anyone? Why are you bailing out Rob Pelinka? Like, oh, this was such, like, I was like right in the throes of like peak COVID at this moment, and I was just beside myself with frustration.
Yeah, well, 2027 or 2029, whenever that pick comes from the Lakers, they're going to be pretty bad. And by that point, Victor Wembanyama will be very good at NBA basketball. So, you know, it is pretty pretty craven, but I get it. They're not really a good enough team to make playoff success something that they can grow on this season. So, yeah, it sucks. The Lakers needed depth, and they got some. But I still don't really trust the Lakers, you know? Like, I look at that trade, and I'm like, this is a bummer that the Lakers got, they improved. But, like, do we really think that LeBron and AD are going to be healthy enough for, like, 50 consecutive games to get back to a good playoff seed and then win all the way in the playoffs? Like, I don't see it.
No way. Also, an underrated aspect of that trade is that D'Angelo Russell's coming in, and obviously Westbrook's going out, and that sort of became a disaster. But the minute that I heard that they were trading for Russell, I was like, oh boy, he is going to piss off LeBron James so much with his shot selection and his, like, stupid sort of frustrating game. He's talented and everything, but I mentioned this, I think, the last time we played Minnesota. You couldn't pay me to take him on my roster. The talent is not remotely worth it. So, you know, have fun with that. The Jared Vanderbilt of it all was really the thing that was frustrating. Kings fans and, like, every other playoff contender that needed a wing was, like, salivating over Vanderbilt. That one really hurt. I just, you know, again, from Utah's point of view in that trade, I just feel like it was bad asset management. Like, I feel like they could have gotten substantially more for Vanderbilt than that, at the very least. You know, maybe they don't want Beasley and they want to flip him for a couple seconds or whatever, but Vanderbilt should have gotten them more than that. In any case, whatever. There is a concept coined by leftist thinker Noam Chomsky called manufactured consent that you are just seeing in spades after this Lakers trade, where ESPN and fucking, you know, all of the major, like, sports media are just immediately like, oh, this team is now a contender. Dude, fucking Kevin O'Connor on The Ringer in his recent power rankings, not that this shit matters, but just for your information, had the Lakers at number 6. After these trades, they are currently the 13 seed, and he had them at number 6, like, in the entire NBA. And I'm just like, man, what the fuck are we doing? Like, what does anyone have to do to compete with this team that is not only bad so far this year, but so, like, depressing and demoralizing? And, like, there's no fun storylines aside from LeBron's sort of, like, sad march towards the all-time scoring record, which he got. And I don't know if you saw this, but when he got it, Anthony Davis, like, when LeBron scored the bucket that put him over the edge, Anthony Davis was just sitting on the bench, stone-faced, looking miserable. And I was like, that kind of sums it all up for you. So, you know, enjoy your stupid trade, Lakers. Fuck you. Hopefully you don't make the playoffs, eat shit, and die.
Yeah, fuck you.
Meanwhile, Clippers sent out Reggie Jackson in a second-round pick for Mason Plumlee, another guy Kings fans, including me, were hoping we could get. Nice little move there to find a backup for Ivica Zubac. Mason Plumlee having a career year, you know, it's not, like, saying that much, but he's a good player. He's solid. He's reliable. You know what you're getting out of him. They also traded Wall and Luke Kennard and ended up with Eric Gordon in 3 second-round picks. Wall went back to Houston, where he just immediately got cut. And Kennard went to Memphis, which was a nice little bit of business for them as well. All they had to give up was Danny Green, who wasn't playing. Clips added to their depth. I could definitely see them passing us. But again, you know, just like we were saying with Phoenix and their potential health problems, what are you going to be getting out of Kawhi and Paul George? It's like, it's impossible to ever really know for sure. Kawhi plays, you're lucky if you're getting 50% of the season out of Kawhi. I personally think that Kawhi has been badly hurt, like hurt to the extent that his career could have been in jeopardy from the time he was in San Antonio, and then in Toronto they invented load management for him, and now he's just kind of playing, you know, 40 to 50% of the games and managing to remain an NBA player that way. But I don't know, man, I wouldn't want to be invested all the way in a guy that is that unavailable.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say the Clippers should have been better than us already this season,
right?
So it's like, if they make a trade and now they look better than us, that kind of just seems like regression to the mean to me. And obviously the reason that they haven't been better in terms of record mostly gets back to what you're talking about, which is that Kawhi and Paul George just don't always play. But otherwise, you know, they already had a pretty deep roster of role players behind those two. and those two seem to have pretty complementary skill sets. So there's really not any reason that they shouldn't be ahead of the Kings. Having said all that, this is a prime example of, like, people were so frustrated in Kings internet world. Like, I saw somebody post a graphic that was just all of the team's additions at the trade deadline, and ours was cash considerations, which isn't very nice to Kessler Edwards. But anyway, this to me is a neutral trade deadline for the Clippers. Like, maybe they needed to do something to, like, stir the pot a little bit, but, like, is Eric Gordon really that much better than Reggie Jackson? I don't know. That seems like a role that they already had filled, basically a guy who scores and spaces the floor some and not an elite playmaker for others. Like, that's just kind of something they were already doing with that player. So I don't know. I don't see it as like a bunch of new value came into the Western Conference type of situation. They are what they were before.
Eric Gordon basically lost that second Houston game against the Kings for the Rockets. He had several really bad turnovers down the stretch, and Luke Kennard's a better shooter. So, you know, fair point. Definitely not scary. Marginal moves, obviously, at best. Finally, the last one, I mean, there were more moves than this, but what we're running down here is just sort of like teams that are relevant to the Kings in the Western Conference. I thought it was really funny that the Warriors finally punted on James Wiseman. There was like a weird situation with this trade where they got Gary Payton II back after, you know, a half a year in Portland. And on the way out, Gary Payton talked mad shit about the Blazers. And then the trade got held up for like several days because they're like, oh, wait, you have like this significant core injury and you're going to be out for several months. Portland was lying to us or whatever. He's been taking Toradol shots. There was all this like weird reporting that came out like right after the trade. And then finally they're like, ah, just kidding. We're fine. We'll do it. I think they were just kind of like looking to get extra compensation or something like that. Whole thing was really weird.
Yeah, I saw somebody point out something pretty interesting about this trade, which is that I think that the main reason that the Warriors did that trade was that they needed to offload a bunch of salary because they're the worst repeater tax situation in the league because they have all of these expensive players that they've kept. Every dollar that they spend in salary cap becomes like $800 worth of luxury tax. And so even though Gary Payton maybe is so hurt that he's not going to play for them at all this season, they still needed the trade to go through in order to get those savings. And obviously, even if the trade gets rescinded, we're past the trade deadline, so they can't accomplish that any other way if the whole trade rolls back. And so the person that posted about that basically identified that the Blazers might have known all along that this issue was going to come up, but they're just like, well, you're screwed. You have to take it. You have to give us essentially something for nothing in a player that's too injured to play for the rest of the season. Otherwise, you lose all of this salary cap benefit. And it's just sort of a loophole that the league doesn't have a solution for.
That's hilarious. I hadn't considered that. I kind of forgot, because he never plays and isn't good, that James Wiseman was the second pick, so he's probably making like $10, $11 million this year.
Yeah, Bagley money.
Yeah, very weird that Detroit, of all teams, were the ones to take a flyer on him, considering they have Jalen Duren, who is both cheap and better, and a rookie, but, you know, what do I know? Anyway, that's just about it for the trade deadline. Like I said, more stuff happened, but as far as the Kings are concerned, you know, those were the things that attracted my attention the most. I want to move on to the All-Star game, the All-Star break, which is coming up. Kevin Huerter was officially selected for the three-point shootout. You love to see it. Kind of funny that Huerter ended up going instead of Keegan Murray, considering that Keegan Murray is shooting better at this point. But from what I've heard, Keegan is going to be playing in the Rising Stars game, obviously, on Friday, and then he's just hopping a flight to Iowa and hanging out with his parents. He's like, fuck this, I'm not interested, which is, of course, the least surprising thing in the world. And more importantly than that, De'Aaron Fox is officially an All-Star. We have two All-Stars. All is right in the world. Justice is served. And our boy is being feted for once in his goddamn life by the NBA. And thusly has, since then, I'm not exaggerating, immediately started getting a little bit more of a superstar whistle, which is so funny to me. I mean, maybe it's just like a coincidence or whatever, but the NBA is very, very funny that way.
Yeah, maybe it's the All-Star thing. I think the NBA officials are working with all-stars all of the time, so it's maybe not that much of a like a direct thing, but I do think that the Kings are going to continue to get good whistles down the stretch because they're an exciting team. They're generally pretty aggressive offensively in the fourth quarter. Fox is doing his thing where he just like is attacking the paint on basically every play. And so it's kind of only natural that the officials are going to start to expect that to happen and have their lungs ready for that moment. And also, yeah, like we did as a fan base and as a media around the Kings did do a pretty good job about complaining about some of the late game calls. And so there's just no reason for league officials not to like hear that and realize, okay, this team is, you know, significantly above 500 going into the All-Star break. They have two All-Stars. Like, we should be expecting them to do good things. And when good things don't happen, maybe there's a foul that we can find.
Yeah, man, Fox is just amazing. He's like Tony Parker, if Tony Parker could rise up and posterize you. I mean, he's just getting better and better in every way. One thing that Mark Jones mentioned in the broadcast tonight, which I find so amazing and impressive and just such a testament to De'Aaron Fox's constant improvement, is that in crunch time, which as we all know is De'Aaron Fox's time, he is by far the best crunch time player in the NBA this year in terms of scoring. He's shooting like 90% from the line down the stretch. And that's something that I noticed just kind of anecdotally over the last week. I was like, just the way that it feels as a fan when he goes to the line at this point, especially down the stretch, I'm like, okay, good. Like, this feels like it's going to happen. There is no longer like a concern. Obviously, he's not going to hit all of them, but that is such an enormous change from a young player who was a little bit shaky at the line to a guy who is now totally comfortable putting the team on his back. Sabonis had a quote the other night when he fouled out down the stretch against Dallas. He's like, yeah, I didn't feel that scared going out because I knew it was Fox time. And like, what a cool dynamic to see from your two superstars.
Yeah, and you can tell that, I mean, I agree that is awesome that his free throw shooting in general has improved that much and that he also is doing it when we need them the most. I definitely, in seasons past, every time Fox stepped up to the line in a close game, expected him to split his free throws. That's just what he did always. So amazing, and all of the kudos in the world to him on what must have been a lot of work to just get that muscle memory to a place where you do expect him to go in at the end of games now. Also, I was thinking about this. You know, there used to be this player in the NFL, Jerome Bettis, who was like a really, really heavy running back, you know, like huge, muscly, but also just kind of, he looked like an offensive lineman. He was sort of a fat guy.
Mm-hmm.
And older sports fans will probably remember him. I don't know if younger ones will. I don't know if anybody young listens to this. But the way that he made an impact was in the first three quarters, he wasn't that fast. He was pretty good at breaking tackles, but basically he just ran downhill, smashed into the opponent, and got 3 or 4 yards. And then by the time it rolled around to the fourth quarter, you were just so tired of tackling this fucking guy. You know, he's like 350 pounds, and you're like, God damn it, I'm still tackling this guy? This game is 4 hours long. And he would drastically improve at the end of games because people would just be sick of it. And I think there's kind of a similar situation happening with De'Aaron Fox where he's wisely reserving his energy, knowing that he can trust Sabonis as a distributor and he can trust Murray, Barnes, Herter, all of the shooters on this team to score enough and move the opposition around on the court a lot. You know, like the broadcast calls out a lot how we're not just a fast team in terms of transition, we're also a pretty fast team in the half court. And then by the fourth quarter, you have to deal with this guy Fox, who's like one of the most overall pound for pound athletic players in the league, and he kind of has fresh legs because, like you called out in the Dallas game, he only had 12 points going into the fourth quarter. So I think it's really like a strategic choice on top of being like the kind of Michael Jordan thing of like, oh, the best get better in the fourth quarter. I don't think it's just that. I really do think that he is specifically recognizing that after last season, when he was really trying to carry the team for 48 minutes and it wasn't good, that he's almost unstoppable if he does it in shorter bursts, and that the most valuable time for that burst is obviously crunch time.
He's a very, very cerebral player. And, you know, he's working with a very, very cerebral coach now. And yeah, I agree. Start of the game, you always see Domantas Sabonis coming out and dominating early. And Fox kind of picks his spots. And down the stretch, you know what's going to happen and you can't stop it. It's going, and specifically for the playoffs, that is exactly what you want out of your star player. I think that this guy is built for the playoffs. I cannot wait to see him compete on that stage because I think we're going to see the best version of him then. And speaking of All-Star, one thing that got announced today by the NBA that just got immediately jumped all over and ratioed to hell, they announced that Karl Malone will be a judge in the dunk contest. And, you know, everybody was just getting their shots in like, oh, I bet if he gives lower scores, it will mean he likes it better because he's into, you know,
fucking 14-year-old girls. Yeah,
he's into impregnating 13-year-old girls. And you know, the thing that occurred to me is I'm like, why would you want to take the bad press there when you could instead flip it and reverse it if you're the NBA and have Vernon Maxwell be a judge for the dunk contest in Utah? I think everybody would love that, except Utah. And who cares? Fuck them. Everybody loves to hate them. They're like the villain fan base in the NBA. And I think Vernon Maxwell would really add a lot to that weekend.
Yeah, it seems like the main problem here is that they had decided to do an All-Star weekend in Utah in the first place, which is dumb.
What's it going to take for Sacramento to get one? I mean, if Salt Lake City gets one, Jesus Christ, Golden One Center deserves it, assuming that there are like five suitable hotels in Sacramento, which I guess is anyone's guess. Oh, and finally tonight, we have just one more topic that was kind of sad, but mostly really funny to me as a Twitter swamp creature. Jim Cosimore, who old heads may remember as the former studio guy for King's Broadcast, sort of a friendly kind of blowhard guy, just lost his fucking mind on Twitter out of nowhere, tweeted at Jillian Adge, who's like a really cool, very like positive, generative analyst, journalist who covers the Kings and the WNBA and a bunch of other stuff. And he tweeted at her literally out of nowhere. At Jill Adge, you are a fraud. Deal with the reality of what we know to work towards a better tomorrow. Not trying to pick fights based on how you vote. We should all be working together. Join me, ... And then just continued to melt down. And everybody's like, dude, what the hell are you talking about? It turns out Jill Adge had liked a post that was somewhat making light of the Chinese weather balloon situation that you probably haven't heard of, because who fucking cares about that? It's a complete non-story as far as I'm concerned. And like QAnon middle-aged white men are just obsessed with this type of shit. And he thinks that there's some kind of like, I guess, major national security concern with that issue or something like that. And just melted down. And Jill Adge's response was literally like, I'm a fraud? What? And oh my god, this is like an extremely online thing for me to be getting into on this show, but I had to bring it up because poor Coz, man, between him and Napier, my god, how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, that story, I don't know, maybe somebody can educate us, maybe one of our mailbag people can go in on us about the balloon, but I think everybody has heard the story. What I'm not sure that I've heard is an explanation for why it matters or why I should care. Like, when clearly all of us are on the internet and with smartphones that are surveilling us 100% of every hour that we are awake or asleep. Like, I don't know. We're all feeding all of this data into Chinese tech companies. And yet we're worried about this balloon. Like,
Jim Cosimore, man, he forgot the main rule about online, which is don't drink and tweet.
Yeah, or don't drink and drive either.
Yeah, don't.
Forgot that rule also.
Yeah, that one's more of a legal rule. This one's kind of more unwritten. But, you know, just there's a real opportunity online that people really need to take more, which is just pause. And 90% of the time, don't tweet the thing you were thinking about tweeting. Just don't tweet it.
Yeah.
Just stop for 60 seconds. Ask yourself, Why won't my kids talk to me? Why does no one like me? Why do I alienate everyone when I start talking very passionately about anything? I think our country would really be well served if a lot of the older slash white slash agitated, red, mad, screaming men would take that advice every once in a while. Just fucking pause before hit and send. That's my advice to you, my dear listener. Just pause.
Yeah. Also, Dianne Feinstein. Not a man, but white.
Dianne Feinstein. I heard a rumor today that Dianne Feinstein was not aware that her retirement announcement was happening or had happened and was surprised by a question about it. I'll just leave it at that. That's just about it for us tonight. So we are on the All-Star break. We are not going to have any more games before next week. Our next game is Thursday the 23rd versus Portland. Friday the 24th, we are at the Clippers. Sunday the 26th at OKC. Tuesday the 28th at OKC. We'll have to see whether we come up with anything for an episode next week because there won't be any games, but I think we might have some fun stuff to talk about. In any case, we will see you then. Enjoy the All-Star break. Enjoy the stupid All-Star game. Enjoy the extremely cool Kevin Herter dominated three-point shootout when he takes on Buddy Hield and Tyrese Halliburton et al. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye, my friends.
Go Kings.
Song is that remembered at random serpenting through fatty coils emerging. Some other thought it's thinking. This light shines above the houses on the ground. This illumination visited upon the whole land. Unmarked helicopters hovering. The Lord is coming soon. Here comes the supercopter, here comes the noise it makes. The demon was an idea, the demon is awake. Well, scratch mark left across the surface of your mind. This hour now upon us, the hour has now arrived. Unmarked helicopters hovering. The Lord is coming soon.